To live in a broken world with your heart open and engaged is to have your heart broken. There is no avoiding it. And the world is broken. Human beings have broken it. We have broken the bonds of our common humanity. We have broken the social fabric. We have broken our connections to the interdependent web. Now, the natural world, unlike the human world we've created, isn't intrinsically broken. It's inherently connected. But humans are breaking that too. And if we let ourselves really see it, let ourselves look at what we've done and feel the truth of it, we experience that same brokenness in our own hearts. That poem I read, Good Bones, was written last summer. It was published in an online literary journal called Waxwing, and it happened to be published 3 days after a gunman killed 49 people at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. One of the journal's readers was moved by the poem in light of that shooting, took a screenshot and posted it to Facebook, and it went viral. Many of you may have seen it in the aftermath of the Orlando shooting. By August, the poem was being promoted by celebrities and had been viewed close to 1 million times. It has since been interpreted by a dance troupe in India, turned into a musical score for voice and harp, and translated into over a dozen languages, including Spanish, Italian, French, Korean, Hindi, Tamil, Telugu, and Malayalam. And since last summer, readership of Good Bones has fluctuated with world events. There were spikes in online views and repostings to social media in the wake of other acts of violence and a big surge after the U.S. presidential election. And it wasn't the only poem to blaze across the interweb in those days. According to the Academy of American Poets, the works that were most shared online on November 10th and 11th, 2016, included Good Bones, Maya Angelou's poem, Still I Rise, and W.H. Auden's September 1st, 1939. What drew people to share those poems in particular? They are not comforting poems, at least not in any immediate or easy way. In each of them, and in the Ellen Bass poem that Megan read, the poet looks directly into the brokenness of the world or the brokenness of her own heart. These poets aren't trying to make sense of the brokenness as if that could somehow make it manageable. They don't rush to fix it or put a different spin on it to make it seem less horrific. They don't avert their gaze or try to focus on something beautiful as if positive thinking could change how terrible, at least half terrible, Maggie Smith says, the world is. No, these poets look right into the brokenness that human beings have created, acknowledge it, feel it, and in the face of it, choose to love. Wow. Ellen Bass confronts the magnitude of her grief for the world, asks, "How can a body withstand this?" A question the poem never answers, by the way. But in the very next line, she takes life tenderly between her palms and says, "Yes, I will take you. I will love you again." Maggie Smith opens herself to the literal truth of violence. The broken physical bodies of birds and children, and still she wants to raise her children to love the world. W.H. Auden confronted the rise of fascism in Europe, and he said, "Not we must resist, although resistance was necessary, but Auden said, quote, we must love each other or die." In times of crisis and of fear, people turn to poems like these that tell hard truths rather than offering easy comfort. We're drawn to voices that challenge us to neither turn away from the terrible truths nor to close our hearts. But how are we to love with these broken hearts of ours? And how can we love a world that is so broken? Maggie Smith's poem hints at one strategy by inviting us to see the world as a house in need of an extreme home makeover, the fixer-upper with good bones. If the house, even a real dump, is well-framed and has a solid foundation, then it could be made beautiful. When I first came across this poem, it had a particular resonance for me because I had recently been using that same metaphor for my own inner work in the aftermath of brokenness in my personal life, including the end of a marriage. I had undertaken the hard work of sorting through the wreckage so that I could rebuild. And I imagined my life as a house with some broken windows, some warped floorboards that had to go, lots of dry rot that had been painted over, but with good bones. Structurally sound, that is, worth saving, worth making strong, and trying to make beautiful. But before rebuilding came the sorting. I had to look through my own character traits, my behaviors and habitual thought patterns, to figure out which needed to be thrown on the scrap heap, which could be salvaged or repurposed, and which were treasures that I needed to save and polish. Broken glass, cracked brick, rotten boards over there, but a solid door, a lovely bit of stained glass, some intact cabinetry over here. And then I needed to go back and review my floor plan, see if any boundaries needed resetting, for example. There were a few. But most importantly, before beginning the process of rebuilding, I had to specifically identify, for my own purposes, what the good bones of my house were, claim them as my framework for reconstruction. So I asked, what is the foundation of my life? What are the central timbers, the weight-bearing walls of my life? And Maggie Smith's poem suggested a challenge. I might ask those same questions about the world. What are the good bones here in my day-to-day life, the life of the world, that suggest we might yet make this dump beautiful, or at least inhabitable? So, here's a partial list that I throw out just to get your own brainstorming muscles working. Facts about the world that suggest we could make this thing work. The light always returns. Think about it. The light always returns. Evolution continues. No matter what we do, stars are born. Babies are born. Human beings see in color. The world is full of color. Wow. Human beings throughout history and in every culture make music. Music and poetry exist and persist. There arises in each generation a passion for justice, and it's contagious. Movements for freedom and justice don't always succeed, but they always come back. The human longing for justice, it seems, can't be extinguished. And there's more. Throughout human history, in every culture, people seek connection and community instinctively, and even especially in the darkest times. In good times and in times of trouble and crisis, people come together in churches and societies, mosques, synagogues, sanghas, sweat lodges, community centers. The dream of beloved community, it seems, cannot be extinguished. And prophetic voices emerge in every generation, calling on us to face the truth even when the truth is not beautiful. The writer Nadine Gordimer said, "The truth is not always beautiful, but the hunger for it is." And that hunger is also something that human history tells us does not die. Now, those are some things I can love about the world. Those are some things that can help me get out of bed in the morning. And the thing is, the most important thing is, none of those wondrous truths about the world and about being a human being in the world is canceled out by the 50% that's terrible. Now, I don't know whether the world is really more or less than half terrible, and thank goodness it doesn't matter because this isn't math. The ugliness and the beauty of the world aren't positive and negative numbers that cancel each other out. The brokenness is real, oh yes. And our truth and justice instincts are real. Planet Earth's forces of creation are real. And I think we are called to live in the full knowledge that all of it is true all the time. When I look at the stars, or at that plant pushing up through the concrete, or at the faces of the people who are gathered to speak truth to power, I think maybe we could make this place beautiful. Now, there are significant differences between identifying the brokenness and the good bones of my personal life and those of the wider world. When I'm putting my personal life in order, a lot of what belongs on the scrap heap is within my own control. My own behaviors, reactions, habitual thought patterns, those I can mark for demolition if they don't serve me, or at least I can schedule them for regular preventative maintenance. But when I look out at the brokenness of the world, the violence and the fear, the inequality and abuse of power, that's not in my control, at least not directly. And that brokenness is so deep and so vast, and I am so small and so fragile in my heart. Those poets I've talked about look right at it, but I tell you, there are days I can't bear to. Is that true for you as well? There are days when I need to just cradle my broken heart and rock in a dark corner. And you know, that's okay. Sometimes that is absolutely necessary. Self-care is crucial if I am going to tend to my broken heart. And I am the one who is responsible for tending to my broken heart, just as you are the one responsible for tending to your broken heart. There are many ways I can do this for myself. Walks by the river or in the woods or in our labyrinth, meditation, singing, coming here to be with you on a Sunday. Next month, Reverend Lucy and I will be starting up a resilience circle to meet weekly and provide spiritual sustenance to help us as we each seek to mend our own hearts so that we can love the world. But here's the thing. I don't have to wait until my heart is completely mended to re-engage with the world. Just like broken bodies need physical therapy, not just permanent immobility, to heal, hearts need to keep loving in order to mend. So my responsibility to myself and to the world is to hold those pieces of my broken heart tenderly, tenderly, as if they are so precious, but then to bring them back into engagement with you and the world, and to love you and the world as best I can, even when it's imperfectly and even when it hurts. And I can't do that alone. I am too small, and it is too hard. But I can do it with all of you. I need to keep looking up at the stars to remind myself that there are powers of creation beyond the reach of human destruction. And I need to keep reading poetry and listening to music to be reminded of all that is magnificent in the human spirit. And I need to take my place in the choir, both literally and metaphorically. When I stand with you, I really can be like that tree planted by the water, able to withstand the winds of affliction. And if I walk with you, even if we don't know where we're going or how to get there, I can trust that we will arrive where we need to be. Joining with you to welcome refugees, to feed and house the homeless, to work for racial and economic justice, I experience yet again that not only is love the best fuel for action, because it is way more sustainable and less toxic than anger. Not only is it the best fuel for action, it is a way to love the world. Action itself is a way to love the world. Whether we're talking about interpersonal relationships or engagement with the world, love's not just a feeling. It's about how we choose to act. And we love the world, in the words of one of my favorite hymns, by working to transform it by our care. The poet Maggie Smith said, "You could make this place beautiful." I say, we could make this place beautiful. We could make this place beautiful. Maybe not forever rid of all that is terrible, but beautiful nonetheless, because beloved. Blessed be.